Thank you to the baseball writers, all but one of you who voted for me.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer.
Yeah, you, first question. Go ahead.
Was that a team decision?
Yeah, I'm not going to be answering any questions about
Rain and Spencer Davidson.
We'll be dealing internally. Over here.
Do you think we'll be seeing more of
Rain Stradamus and Nostra Davidson
teaming up?
I thought it played pretty well. We'll have to look at the tape on that and make a decision moving forward. Yeah.
You guys used to be.
Why shall I snoop it?
What happened with that?
All right, I'm done here.
Exit 31. 2-4 on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
62-24. Is that where you expected things to end up for the Cuse in Albany?
No. No, I mean, I think we all knew that Syracuse was going to win. I didn't think Syracuse was going to put up that many points, though. You know, their offense looking a bit lackluster through the first couple of weeks of the season, even against an opponent like Albany. Didn't see it quite panning out the way that it did.
I said 44-6 the other day, and I think I ended it 44-9. I said that to Glue Guy. Glue Guy, you said 42-10.
That's correct.
And did you give us a final score?
I don't think I did. If I did, it wasn't very high. I didn't think Syracuse was going to put up more than 30.
Well, it looks like they covered the spread, so good value.
Just a bit.
Good value if you picked the Cuse on that one. You know, Utica College also won again, by the way, for our Utica Rome listeners at 96.5 FM. They're 3-0, 37-28 was their win over Western New England. So there's some winning football teams between Division I and Division III in Central New York.
Yeah, and Hamilton College won their season opener as well. So they're, you know, Clinton still in the area. So another local football team getting a W.
Spencer Davidson, I'm Rain. Glue Guy is in here with us. Exit 31 is on the air, Monday edition. Does it feel like a Monday?
It does.
Is it a week? But it's like 75 degrees and sunny out here.
Yeah, but it's still Monday. Like, you still have a whole week to get through.
Well, let's get started then. How about that? Very good. Let's go Nostra Davidson, Rain Stradamus. Cuse covered. That's good. Sean Tucker had 75 touchdowns. The defense had about 45 sacks, and there were a million penalties. I'm exaggerating slightly, embellishing slightly, but can we just start there? Listen, I understand that, well, the word used was kumbaya. There was a kumbaya moment, and we have heard Dino Babers say about that. And by the way, yes, we'll get to soundcheck and hear from him between postgame and his earlier press conference today. But that's a lot, and that has to be concerning. You know, I saw a tweet, I won't name names, but they suggested that's a coaching issue when there is a lack of discipline, and especially against a team. This is Albany. Let's be honest. This is Albany. And you've got Liberty and Malik Willis up next. He's going to be a problem with Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Liberty, Liberty, Liberty.
It's a short week, too. That has got to be cleaned up. I hate to come in being the negative Nancy, but that was an alarming number of penalties. Before we break down all of the wonderful things that happened, which we'll do, let's just start there, Spencer.
I've never seen that many face mask penalties in a single game before. As a matter of fact, I think that the percentage of face mask penalties that will take place in the game of American football through the NFL and college throughout the entire season, I feel like Syracuse alone took like 20% of what's going to be the entire year of face mask penalties on Saturday.
The crazy thing is Sean Tucker had one of them, but it was a weird camera angle if you watched it where you couldn't actually tell. And at first, it looked like it was against Albany. It was against Verse on Albany, but it wasn't. It was actually just the way that the angle played out and then ended up that way. I mean, what do you do to correct that kind of a problem? Is it a coaching issue, or is that just on the players? Because one of the things Dino had said, hey, it wasn't just the freshmen. It was some of the older guys that were doing that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's tough because, you know, it's partially on the coaches. It's partially on the players. I mean, I think that, you know, the players were all having a good time against a, you know, I guess an easy opponent, so to speak. And, you know, they got careless. I mean, they were all busy, like, laughing and having a good time. And, hey, we're great. And they were not focused. I think, you know, I don't think the team would have taken that many penalties had it been a tighter game against a different opponent. But it's still a problem because this team has had, you know, some penalty trouble even before this game.
So because it was Albany and they knew they were going to win this game and you could tell they were going to win this game and Albany was clearly overmatched in this game, that it just it wasn't that focus, that 100% focus. But you've got to play every game that way, mm-hmm. even against lower competition. I mean, it's crazy to think that the margin of victory could have been even more significant than it was at almost 40 points, just under 40 points. Don't you think? I'll stand by that statement.
Yeah.
You can't lay off a little bit, and you can't have 90% focus or 80% focus just because it's Albany. That can't happen. You have to go out and throttle teams like that. Well, they did,
yeah.
But even more so than they did.
Well, it's one of those things that, yeah, you're playing competition that's certainly below what you're typically used to playing. But at the same time, if you're Syracuse, you haven't earned anything yet. You haven't earned anything. You played Ohio. You were supposed to win that game. You won that game. You played Rutgers. That was a tough game. You didn't look good in that game. So where's the entitled feeling? You're playing Albany. You should still be playing your tail off.
You put up 623 yards of offense under all of those circumstances.
I mean, their offense looked good, and it's tough. This is what we said last week. It's almost like a no-win situation because, you know, they did good things. They looked good. They had, some nice plays. That Alford touchdown was amazing, was awesome. It doesn't matter who you're playing. Tommy DeVito put that right in stride for him.
It was a beautiful throw.
It was a beautiful throw. It doesn't matter who, you know, the fact that he's open might be because the corner's not as skilled, couldn't keep up with him. But at the same time, DeVito has to make that throw.
There was also the interceptions. Each quarterback had an interception. Garrett Schrader's was a bad throw.
Yeah.
Period. The one for Tommy, I said this to Glue Guy earlier today. It reminded me of Eli Manning because it was a pass that should have been caught, and then it was deflected. They scored the touchdown off of that. But I felt like I watched that for 16 seasons. I've never seen a quarterback throw so many passes that hit the receivers in the hands or are catchable, and then it deflects somehow and turns out to be an interception. That was just bad luck for Tommy DeVito.
Yeah.
But I don't think either one truly separated themselves. And we haven't gotten a definitive answer quite yet. We're going to apparently hear a definitive answer on who the starting quarterback is. But has that question been answered? Based on what you saw on the field, is my question.
No. But I think we've all kind of known heading into this season and into these first three games that it's really DeVito's job to lose. So if you're looking at it from that part, from that standpoint, DeVito didn't do enough to lose the job in the game.
DeVito gets named starting quarterback.
Yes.
Performs badly against Liberty. We end up seeing Garrett Schrader anyways.
Yes.
Guess who the quarterback is barring injury for Liberty? Malik Willis.
Yes.
Period. Mm-hmm. So, advantage, disadvantage, that Liberty still has to consider both. It's part of the conversation, right? Doesn't matter who they name starter. Did Garrett Schrader do enough to become the starting quarterback of Syracuse? No. Think we're going in with Tommy.
Yeah. No, Garrett Schrader did not do enough to surpass Tommy, you know, here. Like we said last week, though, I think the funny thing is you can sit here and say, you know, Tommy is our guy moving forward. He's the starter. He's the clear cut. He's QB1. Great. Okay, fine. But how is that any different than the first three games? How is that any different? Because he goes into the game as a
starter. I don't have an answer for that if you're asking me.
He goes into it as a starter. And if he performs poorly, you're going to see Garrett Schrader come in. This isn't like he's got like a long leash. He's not Aaron Rodgers or whatever. He's not going to, unless he physically can't play, be the starting quarterback. He is still in a situation where he can very well lose the job. So I don't think that this matters who Dino says is going to be QB1, whatever. It doesn't matter because there's always going to be this competition. Nobody has a long enough leash to be able to make mistakes and still keep the job.
We're going to call this, we should have called this rhetorical questions with Spencer and Rain. ESPN Radio, Exit 31, we're at QSportsTalk.com. I've got to look into this chat. We've got to get a poll up there. We understand all that. Going to be joined today by Stephen Bailey. He's going to give us the breakdown. He's of 24/7 Sports every Monday and Friday. Right here, we talk to him, either a recap or a preview. So we'll find out. Did they get out of the game unscathed? Are there any other injury concerns? We know that Taj Harris didn't play. If you're going to pick the game that if he's got an owie that he's going to recover from that, this might have been the game. Dino even said, and we'll get to this once again in soundcheck, but you kind of can spread the ball around a little bit, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the Damien Alford touchdown if Taj Harris is in the game.
No, you probably don't.
You know what I'm saying?
You probably don't, but that's why, you know, it's good. And it also forces DeVito, you know, more so than Schrader, because DeVito has built up that chemistry with Taj Harris, but it forces him to look at some different receivers. It forces him to go through some different reads and some different looks. He can't rely on having Taj Harris there. So, you know, look, in a game like against Albany, I'd rather have Taj Harris. If he's got something nagging, I'd rather have him sit out, get healthy, and get some different looks in there. This is a game that was supposed to be like a, you know, you kind of try out some different things. So I'm okay with that.
Defensively, even with the 8 sacks, it's not as impressive a number because of who is against. 135 net yards for Albany, 2 different quarterbacks. They could. What was their rushing average was 0.2 yards per attempt. 7 rushing yards total.
Yeah.
That's terrible. 6 different players had a sack. Mikal Jones, Cody Roscoe. Mikal Jones had 7 tackles. Excuse me, Cody Roscoe with the 3 sacks. Another great player, Kendall Coleman, recorded 3 against West Virginia. By the way, if you're wondering, that happened back in the 2018 Camping Bowl. Because doesn't everybody worry about that? It's the 8th time in program history tied for the most sacks in a single game. Blah blah blah. There's another record for you. But it was Albany. Good luck. This is not going to happen against Liberty. This is not going to happen against Florida State. Then again, maybe we should call ourselves Syracuse, Jacksonville State. I don't quite know. But listen, the defense is not the concern. But it was an impressive performance. We have to give credit where it's due. They looked good overall. Everybody looked good overall. Albany couldn't do anything, really. And the score ended up being, they scored 24 points, but a lot of it was just cosmetic at the end of the game. In my humble opinion, was lipstick on a pig.
Yeah, and
they were inept.
Yeah, there was one play, the interception, that was really like a big play for Albany. The rest of it was just, you know, they scratched together a couple of points, but none of it was like, oh wow. Like I never thought at any point, you know, the defense, wow, that's pretty bad that they gave that up. It just didn't matter at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, 14 points in the fourth quarter when it was already over. I mean, who cares?
Ha ha ha. It was a laugher.
Yeah.
Got a second to talk about the Ravens and the Chiefs last night and maybe just squeeze a little bit of NFL in here on X 31 on ESPN Radio to get us started today. Were you gonna answer?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say one more thing about Albany is that it looked like under Cuffler was a little under fire in that game.
Okay, there's the first poll of the day at QSportsTalk.com. Was that Spencer's worst dad joke since he's been on Exit 31?
That can't be my worst. Yeah, come on.
That was terrible.
That can't be my... I mean, it was bad, but it can't be my worst.
You just sunk to my level, dude. So the Ravens beat the Chiefs, and Harbaugh's team loves him. That's my takeaway from that more than anything else. Because we saw him ask his quarterback, Lamar Jackson, last night, you want to go for this?
Yeah.
You want to finish this? Finish them. And they did. So he trusts his guy. His guy trusts his teammates. And there was no question. They went in and they did it.
Yep.
And that's it. Because everybody's like, you can't give Pat Mahomes the ball back when all you got to do is get into field goal position. He's probably going to do it and you're going to lose the game. So you play to not lose or you play to win. They played to win. That team is together. They believe in themselves. It's huge for that locker room. When your star player believes in your coach and your coach believes in your star player, and then the coach isn't in the room, and then they go all talk to each other, and they go, yeah, man, that's our guy.
Yeah.
He knows we can do this. He believes in us, so we believe in him, and then the trust is there. That's a good thing for the rest of the season for the Ravens. Plus, it doesn't suck when you beat the Chiefs.
I mean, absolutely. You know, Lamar Jackson's first time beating the Chiefs. You know, I'll tell you what, Lamar Jackson and John Harbaugh, they have some boulders. They have some boulders, those guys. You picking up where I'm putting down?
You giving me the, they got a sack. Yeah, they weren't afraid. Unafraid? Yeah. Is that what you're trying to say?
Sack of potatoes.
Oh, very, very but, good. Very careful with your language.
Yeah,
I like that.
It helps that it was a 4th-and-1 and not a 4th-and-5, 4th-and-10. But that being said, yeah, I mean, you have a chance to scratch out 1 yard and put the game away so that you can be able to knee instead of having to, you know, put your defense back on the field. Absolutely.
How often do you see coaches punt in that situation and then you scream at your television?
Oh, very often.
For that exact reason. Sometimes I think you surprise your opponent because they don't think that you're going to go for it in a situation like that. And ultimately, in the pressure of the moment, they're not 100% prepared. Maybe physically they are. Maybe they've practiced situations like that, but mentally they're not.
No.
Because they probably thought you were going to punt.
Yep.
They were probably on the sideline thinking, all right, we're going to get the ball back here. And all of a sudden they went, whoa, wait a minute. Nope, game's over.
Yeah.
That's it. we're done.
Yeah, but you, like you said, Rain, you play to win because you took control of the situation. You didn't rely on having to stop Patrick Mahomes' offense. And, you know, it's kudos. Good on the Ravens. I was really, really impressed with what I saw from them. I really was.
So there you go. That's the opening segment of Exit 31 today on ESPN Radio. Breakdown with Stephen Bailey's on the way. Matthew Gutierrez with The Athletic. We'll ask him about his alma mater, but he also has been covering some football, so we'll talk to him just after 3. Chris Stacey as we'll get a Yankees therapy session in there because I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. And then, of course, Soundcheck is on the way, as promised, with some audio from Dino Babers from the press conference today, from the post game on Saturday, and that's all next. QSportsTalk.com. We'll meet you there.
Who's got Twitter beef? Bulletin board material. We've got another Donnybrook, an athletic brouhaha. Let's go toe-to-toe. It's the Exit 31 Kerfuffle.
A classic conundrum.
This is Exit 31. Here is Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
I'm feeling that beat.
Wow, the violin in it, though. That made it.
Glue guy with an audio president surprise for us.
Wow, that was nice.
Very nice, man.
Very nice.
Well, I mean, you complained about the length of the last one after I gave you comedy gold.
It was too much Pauly. It was too much Pauly. We sit around and getting ready for this and got to hear him for 2 hours. He's not listening to the entirety of Exit 31. You know what I mean? He's got other responsibilities that he's taking care of. He's trying to figure out what's going on with the Padres. He is. Did you see that over the weekend? It was crazy. Speaking of kerfuffle, I'll jump to number 2 on our list. How's that? It was a perfect setup. Manny Machado and Tatis Jr. going at it in the dugout. And I'm sitting there, I'm looking at Manny Machado, and it made me flash back to when he took a visit with the Yankees and he was a free agent and he wanted that big contract. He got that big contract from the Padres. But at that point in time, he was that immature me, look at me, clubhouse issue or concern that I'm like, I don't know if you want to deal with that with the New York Yankees. But now then I look at the situation with Tatis Jr. where he's more of a veteran or an elder statesman and has taken on a leadership role, and the way that he handled that. And then his post-game press conferences after that, it got caught on video. If you don't know, Fernando Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado in the dugout, there's some screaming and yelling because Tatis Jr. basically argues with the umpire about a ball and a strike call. And by the way, we looked at the video. It was a strike. Glue guy verified. We were watching that a little bit earlier.
Yes,
that's correct. Absolutely a strike. It's not on the umpire. So the manager comes out to defend his player for the Padres. I forget his name. But he comes out and he gets thrown out of the game. And then, I don't know, this nonsense ensues in the dugout after the fact. And it ends up with the two of them arguing. It gets caught on video. It gets posted. It goes viral. And I'm looking at that version of Manny Machado when it's all said and done and going, I would have signed that guy.
Yeah.
I didn't want him then, but he's matured and he's become a leader. And the way that he handled that situation, I thought was perfect. You know what I mean? Granted, you didn't expect that to get caught on video. You're not supposed to see and hear about that stuff. It happens all the time, but now there it is for us to discuss in the kerfuffle. Do they have beef? Are there issues in the locker room? Is it a result of their struggles? Because you've watched them locked into a playoff spot and then just slowly basically do what the Yankees have done. Play like crap. That's what's happened. And here we are.
Yeah, I don't think there's an underlying issue between these two players. I don't believe that there's a problem in the clubhouse. I think this was an isolated incident. I think this is a moment where you kind of see what he's saying. Tatis was arguing with the ump, and Machado was just basically trying to tell him, hey, you know, look, this isn't about you. This is bigger than you. Don't do something where you're going to get yourself tossed out of the game because we can't afford to lose you. He's saying, you're the best player on our team. You know, this isn't about you.
Like, does Tatis Jr. have to grow up a little bit? Was his reaction poor?
Yes.
How poor? Enough that it affects this team and it's a clubhouse issue for the Padres 2021 version. Yes, they can work through it in the offseason. Can they fix it right now? Because you know what? For him to say that and scream that at him in front of his teammates, that's got to be a concern. And I'm sure that's something that's happening on a daily basis where they've been like, come on with this guy. It's time to grow up. You're young. You're so good. Just let your play speak for itself. Hasn't been happening. Otherwise, I think that explosion, it was the end result of his action there, but probably something they've seen throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's fair, but I really, you know, it was labeled as they had to be separated, and it was like this big argument, but it really wasn't.
That wasn't the case.
It really wasn't. It was him just basically saying, look, man, get your head out of your you-know-what. We got a game to play. We need you. So we need you to have your head screwed on straight. And that was it. And then Tatis was, you know, walked out onto the field. It wasn't sustained after that. It wasn't like there was like punches thrown or shoving. There wasn't any of that.
There's a kerfuffle going on at QSportsTalk.com right now. It seems to be the Cowboys are in the mix on this too, and everybody's having a spirited discussion in relation to that. And I'm sitting here over here as a Giants fan, 0-2 again for, what is it, 7, 8, 10, 50 years in a row now, it feels like?
Yeah, 5 years.
But I'm looking at the, we'll switch here, because the Bills are better than the Jets and the Giants combined since 2017.
Why do you have to do that?
I'm just giving you the truth, man. You got to deal with this. So do I. I know it's the combination of our two teams. We've won 36 games combined since 2017. The Bills have won 39.
Okay,
and the Bills
great.
Demolished Miami, by the way, and I did not expect that. I didn't think that they would lose, but I did not expect a shutout in 35-0. Their defense was amazing.
Yeah, but stop it. You're giving Bills fans way too much ammunition.
The wins and losses speaks for itself. What am I going to argue?
But like, if we give them props, then they're just going to become even more, their heads are going to swell even more.
No, they're not. They're just going to go buy more tables.
Okay, but you know what? Look it, they're destroying, you know, people handcraft some of those tables.
Do they call Vince McMahon? Does he have a stockpile of tables? Is that a thing? We're not doing as many table, ladder, and chair matches as we used to. We got a whole warehouse full of those things. Bill's Mafia standing outside. They're just chucking them into vans right now, getting ready to go. Let's go back to Buffalo. I'm sorry.
Each ticket comes with a table now.
Where are the Bills from? I'm sorry, it's not Buffalo.
Orchard Park.
Yeah, okay, you've got that. I'll give you that.
Orchard Park Bills.
If you want to do the New Jersey Giants, New Jersey
That's
Jets
such
thing.
BS. People, you've heard me rant on this before, but just to reiterate very quickly. The Jets and the Giants play in the New York City area. They play in the New York City market. That's why they are called the New York Jets, the New York Giants, because the interest in the New York City area is in those two teams. Okay, so just because you say, oh, Buffalo's only, New York's only real team, nobody outside of our, nobody east or south of central New York gives a flying F who the Buffalo Bills are.
I normally don't care about the Patriots at all. But I'm going to ask the glue guy, take your 30 seconds here. You have bragging rights right now. We get to heap on Spencer's team. It appears to me there was, as we kerfuffle here on ESPN Radio and Exit 31, a 25-6 loss to the Patriots and their rookie quarterback in his second game. Come on, take a shot at him, glue guy. Take a shot at him.
No.
Why?
It's not worth it.
Why?
It's not worth it at all.
There's nothing you want to say to him. He's just got to live with the loss.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Zach Wilson made a lot of rookie mistakes.
Mm-hmm. He's a rookie.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Mac Jones did not look that great either.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Patriots should have scored a lot more if I was going to feel good about this team. Also, what we learned in week two was that week one meant nothing. We saw the Buffalo Bills lose against Pittsburgh last week.
True.
And they demolished a Tua-less Dolphins team.
I'm going to give Glue Guy credit. He said something to me before the season started. He said, if the Patriots are good, it's going to be because of their defense this year as they bring along a rookie quarterback. That's exactly why they beat the Jets. Regardless of whether it was a rookie quarterback or not, their defense played well.
Yeah, they played well, but unfortunately, the Jets have no offensive line.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean,
I've been saying that for 5 years.
I feel so bad for Zach Wilson because he's going to end up black and blue by the time the middle of the season rolls around.
It's wash, rinse, repeat. This is exactly what happened with Sam Darnold. For all the folks that gave me grief, and there were people that gave me grief, this is what you dealt with Sam Darnold.
Well, similar to the Syracuse situation, you have to beat up on lesser talent.
Folks, in the Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes looked terrible. Why did he look terrible?
No,
his offensive line was Swiss cheese. He was on the run every single play. If you can make Patrick Mahomes look less than average, okay, you can make Sam Darnold, Zach Wilson look terrible. It's not that hard to see. If they're on the run every single play, if they're getting knocked down or hurried every single play, you can't get into a rhythm. This is what the Jets do. It wasn't Sam Darnold. It's not totally Zach Wilson. Yeah, some of the decision-making isn't great, but folks, if you don't have an offensive line, your quarterback is not going to be able to get the job done.
I don't know what you said to him, but he suddenly went off.
Well, it's just...
You're not done. Go.
No, it's ridiculous.
Continue.
It's ridiculous.
It's a crappy performance by the Jets, I mean. 6 points?
Look at Sam Darnold and how good he looked yesterday.
You're playing against a team with a rookie quarterback, too. I mean, come on. You could have done better and showed up a little bit more, Spencer. Oh, my God. Against the Patriots.
You're not doing this.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
What am I doing?
Oh, come on. Yeah, I mean, you're... Yeah.
Hey, listen. The Giants lost on Thursday due to...
Which feels like a year ago.
It's horrible, and I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, but at least the Giants were in the game.
Well, that's also true. By the way, the Bills have the Washington football team. Did you see that there's... Who was the quarterback that the Patriots got rid of? What was his name? Cam Newton, that guy?
Yes, that guy.
Nobody wants him. Listen, there's an opportunity in Washington, even with Fitzmagic out, and you know what? They're smart to go with the Heineke, I know what his real name is. They're smarter to go with the beer.
The Dolphins might be going with Cam Newton.
Tua's bruised up in the ribs. No, are you done? You're not done. Are they giving enough time to calm down? You still stewing? Are you salty about it? That Jets lost to the Patriots? Battle of the rookie quarterbacks?
I'm still angry about the whole Orchard Park Bills thing.
The Bills are the best of the New York team.
I didn't get to finish that.
Go ahead.
I didn't get to finish that.
Go ahead.
The Bills are a Canadian team, essentially. No, but again, you know, the Jets play as close to the epicenter of New York City as the Bills play to the epicenter of Buffalo. So if you want to call the Jets the New Jersey Jets, or you want to call the Giants the New Jersey Giants, you are the Orchard Park Bills. You don't get to use Buffalo.
You can kerfuffle the three New York-centric teams. The Bills are clearly superior to both of our teams combined. If you want to encapsulate that amongst the last 4 years, 39 wins for the Bills, 36 combined for the Jets and the Giants. Boy, it is not fun to be a fan of either one of those teams, is it?
No.
No, it's not. Oh, and we're wondering, do the Yankees give a bleep?
No.
I'm just wondering. We'll get to that and much more, but our breakdown is next with Stephen Bailey of 24/7 Sports. We're going to talk Syracuse and Albany on ESPN Radio and at QSportsTalk.com.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
So Luke Benson finally gets involved in the offense for a couple of plays. They're finally going to a tight end, and then he limps off the field, and now we're waiting to see what happened. We're joined in our breakdown with Stephen Bailey of 24/7 Sports here on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. And Stephen, I guess let's start with that. Have Coach Dino Babers had his weekly presser this morning. Have we found out anything more about Luke Benson and any other injuries, guys coming back? What are we looking at?
Yeah, Benson is the big one I'm watching, and right now there is not clarity there. Obviously he's dealing with a knee injury. Dino basically said that they're still figuring out the extent of the injury, and that kind of aligns with everything I've heard behind the scenes. You know, they don't know yet, and it's really important because Chris Elmore is still expected to miss another week. So if you don't have Benson and you don't have Elmore, then you got Max Mang and Stephen Mahar, two returning freshmen. I don't think we'll see any 12 personnel if that's the case. I mean, are you going to drop both of those guys out there? I don't think so. And even the 11 stuff you have, you don't really have a tight end who's much of a proven receiving threat. And look, maybe Mahar can do a little bit. I think Mang is clearly more of an H-back type, a physical guy who does some things well. But, you know, if that limits you formationally, I don't know. Are they going to run four and wide sets all game? And if so, that puts a lot of pressure on an offensive line that is still figuring some things out.
Are there any other owies of major concern? I believe it was you that used the word unscathed on Monday when we were talking to you and previewing the Albany game. I think for the most part, obviously we know Taj Harris was out, but I don't think that's a very long-term injury. They're hoping to have him back, I think, tentatively for Liberty. I think they're going to baby him throughout the course of the week, quite obviously. But is there anybody else that we need to keep an eye on?
No, when I was on Friday, I said I wouldn't be surprised if a couple starting caliber guys were held out. Todd, Jahad Carter, Garrett Williams, I think all three of those guys will be okay. Garrett's clearly got a nagging lower body injury going on, right? So that's concerning from a long-term perspective, is as someone who could, be needed need to come out kind of at any point, any time. But yeah, you know, those three guys, I think, should be fine to start. You know, Dakota Davis, obviously back on the offensive line. My big question is, how many snaps can he play? He played 36 against Albany, according to PFF. If he can play a full game, that makes things easy. If not, you might have Darius Tisdale going between guard and tackle, and then are you playing Vettorello at tackle as well? So, you know, I think that's the other big personnel thing I'm looking at. How many snaps can Dakota Davis play? And obviously that goes hand-in-hand with the tight end situation, as we just said.
This is our breakdown with Stephen Bailey of 24/7 Sports. Stephen, we talked last week about how it's almost like a no-win situation. You guys win the game. It's still hard to say, okay, we took positives out of that. You lose the game, obviously the sky is falling. But that being said, with the performance that you saw, what, if anything, were some positives that you can take out of that game?
That's a good question.
Eight
this
sacks?
Bad. I mean, they scored 62 points, and, like, I don't really think any of that carries over, right? Aside from, like, they're all healthy. I mean, that is super important. You know, no one got hurt. You know, I thought the offensive line was okay. They weren't, like, great. They opened up some good holes in the running game. You know, when they were able to get out in space, they dominated Albany's linebackers and defensive backs, but that doesn't mean anything against an FBS team and Power 5 teams. You know, defensively, they're really good. The first team defense gave up 3 points against a really bad FCS offense. So, no. You know, honestly, no. I think, you know, Syracuse paid Albany $360,000 for a win. Syracuse didn't get embarrassed. Syracuse didn't get hurt. And, you know, it was certainly a chance for guys like Taj Harris and Jahad Carter and Garrett Williams to heal up. There's some value in that because Syracuse is going 9 weeks without a bye. So, you know, everything about the game that didn't actually happen in the game, I think, benefits this team. But, you know, I mean, good for Sean Tucker for being the first Syracuse player to have 100 rushing, 100 receiving yards in a game, 5 touchdowns, 1 share of Jim Brown, all that stuff. That's great. It does not mean anything in terms of the season. Sean Tucker's a great player, but you basically take it and you throw it away.
Stephen Bailey is giving us a little bit of a breakdown of the Syracuse Albany game here on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com, which is very funny when you look in the chat because everybody's saying the same thing that I happen to have on my sheet of paper in front of me pertaining to the 16 penalties, which Spencer and I opened up with today. That is very concerning. It just is. I mean, I understand this might not be the Liberty team of next year, but it is a step up in competition. You have a dynamic quarterback in Malik Willis. I don't know if they have as much there as last year. Syracuse has clearly improved from last year. Their defense is good on paper right now, but two lesser opponents out of the three games thus far. If you don't clean that up, oh boy, it's going to be it's an issue. It can't happen. I've seen the suggestions, Stephen, of, you know, is this poor coaching? But Dino responded with, it's not just the freshmen, it's the upperclassmen as well. Unpack all that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a smattering of things. I mean, Dino said it himself, there's no common denominator. It's not like it's just one thing. I mean, you kind of have to group them and, I guess, attack them that way. I mean, you know, the special team stuff, which popped up more in the Rutgers game, I believe, you know, I think that comes back to not having a special teams coordinator. You divvy everything up between the assistant coaches, and it hasn't worked so far. And I understand it's only 3 games, and, you know, it's really not a super fair sample size. But, you know, I think you can group that stuff together and say, hey, you know, this didn't happen. We got a full-time coordinator. You know, maybe that's a factor. You know, and then the other stuff, there's some focus penalties. Sometimes some of those tie into special teams and some alignment penalties, but it's kind of everything, you know? So I don't think there's anything that anyone can really say that's going to be particularly insightful. It's just like, they gotta make better decisions and be more focused at times. So yeah, I mean, they can't do that against good teams and win games. The Syracuse team is not good enough to overcome 16 penalties against basically any other Power 5 team.
Steven, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum at this point. I think we're all tired of
talking
about it.
We just have to go there, yeah.
But Of course, Dino Babers said after this game, he's going to be naming his quarterback, his QB1, even though it's all really just talk at this point. But do you feel like Garrett Schrader really did anything at this point to overtake Tommy for the job? Did Tommy really do anything to lose the job? Or is this just going to be status quo? Tommy's the number one, and we kind of move on from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's status quo. I think this whole thing is one about giving Garrett Schrader what he believes to be a fair shake, because you want him to be mentally engaged as the season goes on. Because Tommy DeVito is not going to be able to play every meaningful snap over the course of the year. I mean, that's just, I would pencil that in at like a 15% chance, just getting hit. Maybe the offensive line is really bad and it slows down and you want to throw a changeup in there. I mean, basically he's going to get injured at some point. It's just going to happen. It's just the numbers. It's what we've learned over the last decade, and especially since Syracuse has been in the ACC. And again, you don't have that bye week until after week 9. Like, you need Garrett Schrader engaged. I don't think there's anything that he showed that that would put him ahead of Tommy. I think, in fact, Tommy has shown his mobility and his ability to pull the ball in the RPO and force defenses to account for him. So I think that is my biggest takeaway from the whole competition. And I knew Tommy was mobile. It's not like he's a statue back there, but a willingness to run and be involved, and for the staff to put him in the RPO game and to allow him to put himself in jeopardy, which wasn't always the case. You force the defense to account for the quarterback. Maybe he starts getting some man coverage instead of all these too high looks, and you can throw the ball downfield. I mean, they really haven't had a ton of opportunities to do that with Tommy on the field this year. And I think against Liberty, maybe you see some of that, because Liberty might need to come forward and play the run a little bit more aggressively than other teams have. I think that's the hope for Syracuse. I think that's the biggest thing they wanted to show early this year, is that they can run the ball and defenses need to play them like a balanced team. Because when they didn't last year, because Syracuse couldn't run the ball, there's nowhere to throw it.
I just think you get the team in a field goal position, whichever team can, or whichever quarterback can do that, and let Andre Schmidt kick, we're good to go. Let's just do that. He doesn't miss. He's got a lot of time left. Let's give it to that guy. Listen, he makes field goals. That's what he does. That's my guy. I have decided that is my favorite player on this team. Obviously, he broke the record, but I'll stop there. Stephen Bailey, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again on Friday and get everybody a little bit deeper look at Liberty once we get there. Appreciate the time. I hope you had a great time at your wedding. You're the best, man.
Thanks, guys. Always appreciate it.
Did you see what I did there? You're the best man, because he was the best man at a wedding?
Yeah. See? Oh. But also specify that it wasn't his wedding. That's right. It was a wedding that he attended.
Yeah, we look forward to talking to you, Stephen. Have a great rest of your day. This is ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. You're killing me, Smalls, is next.
You're killing me, Smalls. This is Exit 31. Here is Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Maybe by Thursday, when Dino Babers and Tommy DeVito both talk to Brent Axe, we'll know who the starting quarterback is officially for Syracuse. Right?
Mm.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I still don't think there's a clear-cut number one. Just, I still don't think so. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's just talk at this point. The situation's no different than it's always been. It's just a way to quiet the questions.
Come on, Dino.
But it doesn't matter. It's still going to be, okay, Tommy's the starter. He's going to play first in the game. If Tommy doesn't do well, then it's going to be Garrett. Like, it's the same stuff.
Here.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I have audio. We will get to sound check in hour number two at about 3:30. We've got some pieces of audio from the post game and from the press conference a little earlier today addressing that, and a whole bunch of other, I guess, talking points or issues or takeaways from the win over Albany. That's for sure. But I've decided, as we get into our airing of the sports grievances, our You're Killing Me, Smalls segment, our What Makes You Roll Your Eyes segment. It's pretty funny if you look at QSportsTalk.com in the chat. Some are saying the ACC is down a notch as far as where you rank in these Power 5 conferences. And I think if you look at the records in some of these teams, and Clemson, what was the word used? Dumpster fire? You could say that. I've officially decided I'm calling their quarterback Rugi Alele. That's what I'm going with for the rest of the year. Rugi Alele, yes, has to do with the Yankees' Rugi Odor.
Say the full name.
It's easier. Rougned Odor.
Thank you.
Rougned Odor.
It's not that difficult.
Spencer coached me on that, and I finally got it. And Glue Guy will tell you, we're back tonight at 6 o'clock with the Yankees on deck. I have tried to get that right and just said, you know, I'm calling him Rugi all year. I finally got Rugned. I got it down.
And was it that difficult?
I don't know, but for some reason, I feel like I need to combine his nickname with the Clemson quarterback because I struggle with his on a daily basis. So I'm going, and I'm going to call him Rugi Olele. And I want everybody else to do the same if you're out there listening right now.
Yeah, but the problem is if we once we actually talk about Syracuse for the Clemson game, that's all I'm going to say.
Rugi Olele. I'm gonna make you remember. Liberty. That's going to be, by the end of the week, I'm never going to be able to say Liberty, the football team's name, without doing that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you.
If I was on the ACC network broadcast for that, that's exactly what I would say all game.
Nobody called Undercuffler undercover.
No,
I was waiting.
Didn't. But he was under fire.
But they called Otto Ollie. We caught that.
Yep.
He did
correct himself, though, so I'll give him that.
He did. Deshaun Watson is an inactive, even with Tyrod Taylor out injured for Houston. That's what's killing us, Smalls. Why is it up to the team weekly to put him on the inactive list when the commissioner's office just say you can't play football until all of your legal issues are straightened out? It looks horrible for the league.
It does.
I understand there's been some, I guess, pullback on some of these accusations, and some evidence has been released in the public forum that I'm not saying excuses him, but there were certain instances where you could be led to believe it may have been consensual. There are some others where it was some sketchy stuff going on, and there's still plenty of that out there, and you can't have this. Just from a football aspect, Houston doesn't need to be dealing with this. But as long as he's showing up there every day and being declared ineligible to play every single week, it's like the Trevor Bauer thing. Nope, it's another week. Nope, it's another week. Nope, it's another week. Until they finally said, let's get him out of there.
Yep.
That's what you have to do. It's a massive, massive distraction. If you just want to look at it from that aspect of it, take the humanity and the ladies out of this that were involved in these situations with him. Let's just make it to Rod Taylor's team or your backup. Who's the backup? I mean, what level? Are they the fifth quarterback on this team now?
I forget who it was.
You understand what I'm saying, though? Enough's enough. He's just don't play. You just can't play this year. Just move on. We'll deal with this.
I don't know how you can send him out there on the football field.
I mean, talk me off the ledge. Is there a reason to keep doing this that I'm missing?
I would love to argue with you here, but
I know you would.
But it's just, it's a common sense thing. I mean, you have to put the questions to bed. And you can't let him, you know, run out in the public eye on the football field this year. You have to make it. I mean, the problem is there's a legal process to this, too. You can't allow him to be playing while there are legal proceedings against him. Now, of course, you're going to see what comes out of it, you know, and you have to say innocent until proven guilty. However, There's a criminal aspect of this at this point.
It's the Godeldo who needs to step up and say, you're done for the rest of the season. Roger Godeldo.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Yeah.
What is Davis Mills? That was your answer.
Oh, so that's
Davis Mills.
That's
Mills.
Where they are. It's not even Davis Webb, who used to be on the Giants depth chart from Cal. Remember
Davis
him?
Mills.
Okay.
Davis Mills sounds like it should be a hamlet about like 20 miles east of here.
And wait a minute. Aren't they 2-0, though? Listen to me.
No, they're 1-1.
Okay, they're 1-1.
They lost against the Browns yesterday.
That's right. They ended up losing to the Browns yesterday. That's right. But they won their first game. Well, Tyrod Taylor ended up getting hurt, so that might have had a little something to do with it. Needless to say, okay, they're not 0-2, so it could be worse.
It could be.
All right. You still need to declare him ineligible.
You could have a very unhappy J.J. Watt, which just makes me unhappy when he's not, because he's such a good dude.
J.J. Watt's on the Cardinals.
I'm glad.
That's what I'm saying.
Huh?
That's what I'm saying, Matt.
What do you mean?
I'm saying it could be worse. You could have J.J. Watt on the Texans being really upset because they're 0-2. J.J. Watt's on the team. Instead, they're 1-1. J.J. Watt's not there. He's happy in Arizona.
You're happy that he's with Arizona.
Correct. Sorry.
I got you.
Yes.
Matt.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I'm just kidding. No, it's actually, real quick, taunting penalties. It's like Oprah.
That's all you have to say.
Yeah. It's Oprah giving out the cars. You get a taunting penalty, and they put cameras in the end zone to let these players have personality and celebrate. Fans love this stuff. If you're still thinking it's 1950, get off my list, stop it with that, okay, Boomer? Even I'm not old enough that I have an issue with that. I don't care.
I score
a touchdown in the NFL, I'm going to celebrate. I'm going to. And to quell the personality is ridiculous. Just... I mean, listen, there's, you know, taunting when you see taunting as opposed to over exuberance based on a play. That's just kind of part of the way the game is. Let them let it out. It's an emotional, physical game. I mean, enough. You're killing me, Smalls.
You're killing me, Smalls.
And give them positive news to close out.
All right. We always talk about you're killing me, Smalls, and all the negatives and the things bothering us. This is a you're not killing me, Smalls, or you're helping me, Biggs. Let's do that. I like it, Biggs. Okay. I don't know.
I'm down. Go.
All right. So this past weekend, high school football in New York had a couple of ladies contributing big time. They had from Ichabod Crane High School, Abby Dulch. Not only, she was the lone goal scorer in her girls' soccer game either earlier that day or the day before. And then she went 7-for-7 on extra points.
Nice.
In the team's, I think it was like a 49-0 win. There was also Sophia Laspina, who had a touchdown reception for, it's Mepham, Mepham or Mepham, one of those two.
Rugi Laspina?
Yeah, and that was on Long Island. She had a touchdown reception. She's the first girl in Long Island high school football history to score a touchdown. So good on those two ladies getting it done. Play like a girl. I love it.
Proud girl dad right here. Love to hear stories like that. Good for those young ladies getting that done. I just sounded like a boomer when I said young ladies. I'm sorry. The glue guy's been trying to get us to take a break so we can get ready for Matthew Gutierrez with The Athletic up next. He's been working at that for like 3 minutes, so I get one too.
Killing me, Smalls.
I'm killing me, Smalls, on your behalf, glue guy. It's ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. We'll be right back. We're going to talk to him about the Buffalo Bills.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
Matthew Gutierrez just texted me back. He is in the middle of working on something. Of course, he is now reporting on football with The Athletic. He said he will be calling us back in 2 minutes or we can make that attempt again. See what's going on. See, it's not quite the same when he's covering Syracuse basketball, for example. We kind of know where all the moving parts are when it comes to covering the Buffalo Bills. Well, it's a little bit different, right?
He's so, just covering the NFL.
It's a little bit. Well,
I really don't care.
For
as
our
much.
Purposes today, okay. It's the Bills. Yes, he is an NFL writer at large for The Athletic, and we'll be talking to him momentarily.
Can you imagine being pigeonholed and just covering the Bills? Ugh.
Ugh. You mean the best football team of the New York State-centric teams? That
yeah,
one?
Well.
That has a better record since 2017 than our Jets and Giants combined? It's terrible. Actually, I want to thank Kevin in the QSportsTalk.com chat. He said, I'm really sorry about your Giants. So he's a nice Cowboys fan. It's like the only one I know because the rest of the Cowboys
fans
are
saying
just...
Was he saying it like, I'm really sorry about your Giants? Or like, really sorry about how bad your Giants are? Like, I think it was more like that.
I know a
Should
lot
we give
of good...
the benefit?
Well, I know a lot of good people that are Cowboys fans. I just... Their
Do you?
Taste in football teams is terrible.
Do you, though?
Yeah.
Because once I find out that they're a Cowboys fan, I start to question the integrity of the human.
Did I see where +6.5 dogs to Liberty? Did I see that scrolling through
yes.
in the chat there?
Yes, CBW's all over that.
I would take that. I would take that.
Everyone's trying to help you with your computer problem, too.
They're telling me how to fix this. Wait. Let me see what's going on here.
Turn it off and turn it back on.
Yeah, that works with everything. That never seems to work.
Do the old N64 type of thing. You know what N64 is, right? That was after your time. Still.
The Nintendo 64?
Yeah, the Nintendo 64. You take the cartridge out, you know, you blow on the cartridge, and it's all good.
You throw it against the wall? That's what you do?
Oh, Rain, it's come on, man.
How do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah.
Don't out me on this. I know it's a Nintendo 64, and we'll leave it at that. You guys sit there and play with the joysticks all day and play your video games, and I have other things to do, like raising my kids. Jeez.
Yeah, I hear Pong was a fun game.
Dude, Atari. That's where it was at. We'll be getting to Matthew Gutierrez on momentarily to talk about the Buffalo Bills, but I wanted to point something out. Their defense, and I'm being master of the obvious here, was spectacular. I mean, Greg Rousseau... Dude, 2 sacks, first of his career, promising rookie, Epinesa. Wow. You know, he didn't fill up the stat sheet. It wasn't like he had 2 or 3 sacks, but he was just constantly in the backfield, like wreaking havoc on Miami's offense. They just obviously were inept and did nothing being shut out. But Taron Johnson, what a game for him, too. That's all you heard about after. I think it was Micah Hyde. I might be... You know, delivering that quote to somebody else, but I think that's who said it was basically like, here was the compliment. And you know how this works, guys. If you do something positive on the football field, you're a dog. And that's basically what he was called. Your assessment of the Bills' defense. There's nothing negative you could say, right?
No, it was spectacular. When you hold a team to a goose egg, when you shut a team out at their home field, especially a divisional opponent, and one in the Dolphins, who it's not like the Dolphins are a laughingstock team. So that is a very, very impressive performance. Again, Tre'Davious White is front and center in everything, seven tackles yesterday. But on the offensive side, too, you got to give a little credit. I mean, Josh Allen looked good yesterday. You know, two touchdowns. Yeah, he had an interception, but 17 for 33. I mean, he certainly looked like he was, you know, I know that after last week we were saying, is he reverting back to, you know, rookie year Josh Allen?
Are you happy with that completion percentage, though? If you want to critique anything, could it possibly be that if you're a Bills fan, are you just going, you know, the 135 nothing, not a big deal here?
Well, I mean, if you're asking me if I'm happy about it, no, because it's Josh Allen and the Bills. So I want it to be worse. Is that what you're asking?
I'll let you off the hook.
I don't think you can be upset with the performance. I really don't. They did what they had to do. Devin Singletary was good in the game as well. But Josh Allen got it moving with his legs as well. Averaged 7 yards per carry on 5 carries. That's not bad for your quarterback.
Let me attribute Matt Perino, who we've had on before, Bills beat reporter for Q's.com. He said Taron Johnson, and it was Jordan Poyer, excuse me, with the quote that I had mentioned. He cut him right off, and he said he's a dog. He went on, he talked about him for like 20 seconds, talked about what a great player he is, laughed a little bit, said you didn't even need to ask the question. He was great today. It's almost like you can single out every member of the defense and say they did their job. They were dogs today. I mean, you don't shut a team out unless it's a team effort, as we now have Matthew Gutierrez with The Athletic on the phone. We're lamenting on how good the Bills defense played yesterday in the win over the Miami Dolphins over the Fish. Matthew, your comments. Hello.
Hey, guys. Thank you for bearing with me there. Yeah, I mean, like you touched on, just listening to the back end of that, absolutely agree. I think you saw it. You knew, and Coach McDermott, I think, touched on it after the week one game versus Pittsburgh. But you certainly saw glimpses of it, and you saw the potential there. In week one, you just had a quick throwing quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger, who was able to, you know, work around it a lot more than Tua and Miami. So for them to get to him so early in the game and really just pressure him, frustrate him, made it a long afternoon from the get-go. The defense clearly stole the show in what was a 35-0 blowout. The offense comes along later in the game, but defensively, I think you got just about everything you can ask for this early in the year.
Matthew Gutierrez with The Athletic, officially here with us on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. He has moved from covering Syracuse to the NFL entirely, not just the Bills. We're focusing on the Bills today. Give us some remaining takeaways that you might have about that game yesterday, and then tell us what you're working on in the next week or two that we need to keep an eye on as far as the NFL in general.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, I thought, you know, there was some concern with Josh a little bit earlier in the game, but I think he showed some signs of maturity, you know, going into this, especially the second half, and trying to read things better. So I think we'll see more of that from him. Still very early. This is a Bills team that obviously very well could have stolen a win in week one, but you didn't. So here they are now at 1-1, and very well could go to into the Kansas City game at, I think it would be 3-1, and look, you know, really good and try to put up a fight against the Chiefs team that, you know, is coming off a loss. So they are certainly beatable. Certainly some vulnerable spots there, especially with the Chiefs defense. At times it was Lamar Jackson, but I think for round two, Allen and that offense will need to, you know, use these next couple of weeks to, you don't want to write the wins in the book, but use these next couple of weeks to really progress offensively and try to get that somewhere in the atmosphere of where that defense is. Because again, it was just so good, as you guys touched on there. But otherwise, I'm all over the place right now, working on all sorts of stories across the league. So I'll definitely shoot guys a text so you can see them. We can talk about them down the line here later in the season, doing some breaking news as well with our push notifications and our shorter form stories, especially on Sundays, Monday nights, and Thursday nights. So that's been the main area of focus so far.
You don't want to you don't want to overreact to a win early in the season. You also don't want to overreact to a loss as well earlier in the season. So, Matt, I mean, just quickly, if you're a fan of the New York Jets or the New York Giants, is it already time to panic? Or you know, I mean, is it already time to consider this a lost season? Because it just doesn't seem like either are going to be doing anything of substance this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's easy to hit the panic button early. And, you know, even with Q's basketball, right, we talked about it. The expectations are so high that, mm-hmm. you know, they start a year, you know, 2-2 in ACC, 2-3, whatever, occasionally. And then it's like, oh, my goodness. And they usually, you know, turn it around and end up, you know, at least 500 in ACC and then, you know, make a Sweet 16. But, you know, so with the New York teams, though, I don't think that's the case. I think there's certainly a lot more room for concern with both teams. It's, you don't want to write off a season this early, but it certainly looks that way, just given what they have. I don't think either team has a whole lot to look forward to this season. I was getting texts from friends that wasn't watching the Jets game, but one interception, two interceptions, three interceptions. Then I got like another one was a fourth, and I couldn't believe it. I thought, you know, everybody was just kidding around. So that not a good sign for either of those fan bases. But hey, they're pretty accustomed to it of late, for sure.
I was watching the game as a Jets fan. I was watching what was unfolding, and I still thought it was a joke. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah. You know, I mean, one of the throws, was it the fourth one? It was just like a lollipop.
Yeah.
You know, they got a lot of work to do, clearly. Yeah. It's almost like, where do you even start at that point?
Well, offensive line.
The glue guy didn't mind watching the game. He was also one of the three or four people that were watching that game, I'm sure. Matthew Gutierrez, thank you for the time. We'll reach out again very soon. Best of luck as you're taking on this new adventure covering the NFL. Up next, Chris Stacey will join us from NYY Sports Talk. We got a little Yankees therapy session. Yeah, it's bad right now in the Bronx. ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and Spencer on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com.
We are back to have a Yankees therapy session here on Exit 31, ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Sevy's in for Cell Romano now, who they officially released him, or
that's
is he,
correct? Yes.
Is it waivers again?
It's a release.
Every season, there's that one guy that's on the roster, back off the roster, on the roster, back off the roster. Right now, it's Cell Romano. You're not going to get anything more than hopefully something out of the bullpen for an inning or two here or there. It's a weird trip for Luis Severino to be here at this point in the season with just over 10 games remaining, and you're throwing him in here. I haven't heard much of anything. It's like every time he makes progress, there's another setback. But are they desperate? Are we desperate right now? Chris Stacey with NYY Sports Talk, answer that question.
I was actually going to prepare to answer your question by tell me you're desperate without telling me you're desperate.
So there you go.
I mean, it really, and at the same time, I got to be fair. Even when the Yankees were playing well, we were saying that, you know, they got to do whatever it takes to get him on a major league mound this year. Even if it's not, you know, even if they don't feel hopeful that he'll, you know, get ready enough if they make the postseason. I still think it's important because he's so far removed now from a major league mound that, you know, these injuries start to pile up. And it's like you get to a point where if he went a whole nother season without pitching in a big league game and then the off season hits, it's just, I don't know. I just feel like there's a psychological factor to that when you can maybe get on the mound for a couple games, feel like you're making big progress and have the motivation to continue that progress in the off season. So I do think it's important. At the same time, I think the Yankees are hoping to catch a little lightning in a bottle with him right now. Maybe, you know, not rush him through, but hope he can come up here and give you more than you'd expect from a guy who hasn't pitched in so long.
Chris, the fact that you sat here and said, if they make the postseason this late in the season, to me, I mean, that is just such a travesty for this team to have not taken control enough to be locked into a postseason spot at this point, because Luis Severino coming back isn't going to matter if you don't play, you know, after these next 12 or whatever games. So for you, it's just, how disappointing is just the seemingly lack of urgency that this team has, the uninspired play that this team has, just I mean, it's mind-boggling to me that so many players that are this good can just seem to care so little.
It's a Dillagaff thing. A Dillagaff thing, if you know the acronym. Do I look like I give? You can finish that in your head. Chris?
Yeah, I actually tweeted a timeline of Yankee expectations leading into the 2021 season. And it starts with, a World Series title. That was the highest expectation. And obviously that equals success, and that's what this team needed now, especially now we're a couple years behind the ball from where we were told, in 2019 would be the year they'd be World Series ready, and we've regressed from then. So at this point in World Series, it's okay to expect it. Not only do the fans, not only did the fans expect it, but Vegas expected it. It's not irrational to think that this team should be World Series ready. And then you drop down to, if they just won an AL pennant, you're disappointed, but at least you can walk away with something, and maybe next year is when they really put it together. And then, the next level from that is if they only won the AL East, the wild card game or division. And it's like, from there on, it's still just such disappointment that you can't comprehend. But then my last point on the timeline was not even making the playoffs. And there's only one word to describe it, and that's catastrophic.
Unacceptable.
I mean, this is a catastrophic failure on all levels, and it's truly incomprehensible that this team can do what they did and fail this poorly. It's mind-boggling to me. It's one of those things where you would look at it and say, it's almost impossible, right? It's almost impossible. The Yankees, look, with this extra wild card, is it fun? Of course. It gives more teams more opportunity, more fans, hope later in the year. But it's also made it very difficult for teams as good as the Yankees to not make the playoffs. It's almost like you have to try to not make the playoffs, to not make it when you're as good as this team should be. And the fact that we're sitting here, and it's not even like we're on an upswing here where we're trending upwards. This is a downward spiral that has shown me no signs of slowing down.
You gave up 11 runs back-to-back days with roughly 10 days left in the season. And then your ace goes out there and gives up 7 runs. Not good. Chris Stacey with NYY Sports Talk here with us on ESPN Radio. It's Exit 31 or AccuseSportsTalk.com. To answer a question in the chat on there, Herman has not been called back up to the Yankees. I've seen Kevin and a couple others asking on that. The recent transactions, Seve for Sal Romano, Luis Gil back to Scranton, Miguel Andujar sent there for a rehab assignment, and they have recalled Esteban Floreal and sent down Clark Schmidt. Anytime we talk about the Yankees here on Exit 31, it's brought to you by William Matar. If you're hurt in a car, call William Matar. But back to the, lack of performance on the field. Garrett Cole sucked yesterday. It was his worst start of the season. He was terrible. He was booed off the mound. Think about that statement in itself. You didn't think that you would see that if Garrett Cole is Garrett Cole. Even in a bad Garrett Cole game, the thought of 7, you're thinking 3 or 4 runs. You're not thinking 7 runs. I mean, it couldn't have come at a worse time.
Yeah, I'll never sit here and tell you that Garrett Cole isn't an ace. I'll never sit here and tell you that the Yankees shouldn't have signed him. I'll never sit here and tell you that he's not one of the best pitchers in baseball. But not only will I sit here and tell you this, but Garrett Cole would sit here and tell you this if he were on the show, that he's got to be way better. And it's just unacceptable that he went out there. And this isn't the first time. This is maybe the 6th or 7th time where the Yankees really needed him, and he kind of just fell flat. And it's really difficult to see because Garrett Cole is such a competitor, man. And it's so tough to sit here and be critical of him because I love the guy up and down. I love what this guy represents. I love his fire. But like I said, he'd be the first to tell you that what he did yesterday and what he's done in several games this year, despite being absolutely brilliant, throughout the year, is just not what aces do. And there's one thing, and there's one person I want to go back to, and that's CC Sabathia, where if you remember CC in his prime, especially when he came over here in 2009, he didn't matter. And this really goes across the board for most aces. it didn't matter if he had his good stuff. If he didn't have his good stuff, he found a way to make his bad stuff that day pretty effective, where he kept this team in the game. And my problem with Cole this year isn't that he's had a few, you know, bad games, and you know, that happens to the best pitchers. It's the way he has the bad games. Not only the importance of the game itself, but how quickly, when he's bad, it just gets so out of control that an ace's job overall is to keep your team in the game at the very minimum. And when he's bad, he's been going out there and completely taking him out of it from the first inning on. So that's just unacceptable. He'd tell you that. And now that Gerrit Cole is kind of questionable and what he's going to give you, I don't know any reliable person on this team right now in a big-time spot that I can count on.
Chris Stacey with NYY Sports Talk on the phone line with us, the Accelerate Sports phone line. ESPN Radio, QSportsTalk.com. Chris, so that's kind of leading into my next question. We got one more for you. You know, we've talked about the fact that we need somebody to step up, somebody to be a leader. It looked like Aaron Judge for a little bit was heating up. He was going to kind of take control. He's fallen flat a little bit.
It's not the manager.
Yep. Gerrit Cole, we thought he was going to step up and be the guy to kind of lead this team. We saw him, you know, coming out of the dugout the other day against the Mets. And, you know, it looked like he was going to kind of be the guy people rally around. Well, he fell flat in his performance. So where does the team go from here? Who do they look towards as a leader? Or is this just a team, you know, at this point, there's no one that's going to step up, even if they somehow back their way into the postseason?
I don't know how to answer that question long term, but I can certainly tell you that there's one guy that comes to mind for the rest of this year that I don't care how small he is compared to the rest of the clubhouse, needs to stand up, get this team fired up, and go out there and let them know that technically, despite how poorly they've played, their fate is in their own hands. Because if you look at the schedule and the teams ahead of them, they're going to be battling each other. So if the Yankees go out there and find ways to win day in and day out, technically their fate is still in their own hands. And that person is Brett Gardner.
Yep.
Because Brett Gardner's been here the longest. He knows what it feels like to win. He knows how to win. And I'll tell you what, everyone wants to rip this guy, right? Everyone wanted to rip the Yankees for bringing him back. But, man, I can't think of one other more reliable player than Brett Gardner in his tenure as a New York Yankee. And this guy deserves the respect of his fans, of the fans, of his teammates. And he's the guy who needs to step up and get this clubhouse in control and say, I don't care who else is doing what. This is my team right now, and my team's not going to go down the way we've been playing. We are going to go out there, we're going to make the postseason, and we're going to make a run at a World Series title. He's the only guy who can do it. In my opinion, he's the only guy, and he needs to start tonight.
I would rather see him next year than have Aaron Hicks back, and I stand by that statement. We got to stop right there. Chris Stacey with NYY Sports Talk here on ESPN Radio, Exit 31 and QSportsTalk.com, our weekly Yankees. Well, we were hoping for brag sessions. Instead, it's therapy sessions. No, but we all need the catharsis. We'll be right back. Soundcheck is next. We're going to hear some post-game and earlier today, the press conference from Dino Babers, and discuss.
This is Exit 31 with Rain and WKTV Sports Director Spencer Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Listen to this. Mic check. Okay? Good. Here's your sports soundcheck.
Even with the performance against Albany, because, you know, it's not a Power 5 team, that's probably what ended up hurting Sean Tucker, was not an ACC Player of the Week. But I told you, my guy is Andre Schmidt. That's right. That's my guy. Because you know what? That kicking game with him, it plays against any opponent in any conference at any level. As long as you got that guy and you get him into range, I feel like you're going to get some points. And did you know Dino Babers kind of went off on him a little bit in post-game remarks. Was asked about Andre Schmidt. As you know, he now holds the record, and he's got the rest of the season and next if he wants to stay to just obliterate the record and probably put it out of reach, because who's to say you're going to get the extra year again down the road? But let's listen to Dino Babers on Andre Schmidt.
The things I think when I think about Andre, I think about the very first time, and this was Sterling Hoffrichter. He comes up to me and he goes, "Coach, the new kicker is really good." I'm like, "Which kicker?" He points to Andre. I'm like, I said, you're my kicker. He goes, coach, he's really good. I said, well, how good is he? And Sterling said, he's better than me. And when he said that, I looked at Sterling and I said, he's not better than you until I say he's better than you. He says, coach, he's good. I said, all right, well, we'll let him kick next time, not this time. And then Andre comes up and he kicks the next time. And we have a camera. I've talked to you guys about this. We have the goalposts on our field and we have a camera right in the middle to take pictures. And he comes up the first time, he kicks and he hits the camera. The camera is the bar is as small as this is. And he hits the bar in the middle of the goalpost. And then we move the ball to the right hash and he hits the pole again. And then we kick some more kicks, we go to the left hash and he hits the pole. I had never seen that before. And Sterling's looking at me and he says, I told you. And that was his freshman year. And about, I don't know, 10, 12 days later, he was our kicker. And I can still remember after 4 weeks, I think it was about 4 weeks deep in the season, the way he was kicking, I'm like, this guy, we got to give him a scholarship. And I can still, I won't say to coaches, some coaches were like, well, you know, let's wait at the end of the year. Let's see. I mean, he could just be on a streak and he could bottom out. And I'm going to take credit for this. When I looked at him, I said, I am not going to be the dumb coach that has some kicker that turns into an All-American that's not on scholarship. I said, we're putting him on scholarship right now. And it was about 4 weeks in. And that's the year that he won the Lou Gossett. So we thank the world of Andre. He's funny. He's unique. And he's our kicker.
There you go. You just need to pick the quarterback that gets him into field goal position. And you just keep trying to do that. It just it shortens the field, right? Isn't that the game plan moving forward? I'm totally kidding, obviously. And do you give it to the guy that shaves or the guy with a beard? I mean, is that the question?
Well, it depends. I think in summertime, you know, if this was like spring ball, or, you know, the first few weeks of the season when it's still kind of summer weather, you give it to the clean-shaven guy. But then when the Central New York winter hits, you got to go with the beard.
Bit warmer, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get an update on the QB battle from Dino Babers here in Soundcheck on ESPN Radio and Exit 31.
It's fair enough that I need to go back and look at the tape. It's not something that you want to do on emotion. You want to take the emotion completely out of it, even though it's a very emotional decision.
We understand he's going to name a starting quarterback prior to the Liberty game on Friday here on this short week. But then when asked, of course, will we see both quarterbacks versus Liberty? We still really don't know if it's just going to be one quarterback for the rest of the year, barring injury, of course.
We're going to have to see. You know, one guy is going to start, and let's see if he finishes.
I mean, poor performance. You need a quarterback that can run the ball a little bit more. The game and the teams, the matchups dictate those types of things. Interesting, though, defense, Syracuse's versus offense, Liberty's. Malik Willis, obviously a dual threat, but is it 8 sacks total so far in their 3 games? Mm-hmm. Campbell, Troy, and Old Dominion have been their opponents. Obviously, it's a lower level of competition, right? And they're beating up on not great programs. But the fact remains, 8 sacks, that means Syracuse, who has a top 15 pass defense and a top 4 rushing defense, according to ESPN, that's right in there in QSportsTalk.com in the chat. Guys are doing homework for us, and I'm passing the information along. Well, what do you think? So you're saying there's a chance, Spencer?
So you're telling me there's a chance?
I think so.
You know, I feel good about this game. I do. You know, I think it's tough. It's tough coming off a game against Albany. It's hard to take stock in anything that they did in that game. But at the same time, I think this team is trending in the right direction. I do think that this team will have a chance against Liberty, and I feel like they're going to have a real chance against Florida State.
Well, I tell you one thing. We can't have 16 penalties. I don't care who you're playing against. That's a problem. You got lucky it was against a team that you were clearly overmatching on every aspect of the football field. But Dino was asked about it in the post game on Saturday. Dino was asked about it in the press conference earlier today. This is called Soundcheck for a reason. I'll play you both of Dino's answers. Here's the first one.
No, and that's the alarming thing. It was something that was common. You can go and attack it, and it's young people, but there are some older people in there too. And we had a very productive kumbaya meeting on the field today, and hopefully it'll take root and it'll show up on game day.
8 penalties for 79 yards just in the first half. There are more penalty yards against Syracuse than offensive yards for Albany in that game. Let me give you the remainder of Dino Babers' remarks about these penalties and the problem that they are.
They weren't all freshmen. Of course. 67, 60. Go ahead.
How do you go about handling that? What do you tell your guys to sort of get rid of that?
We talked about it at halftime. We talked about it at the end of the game. And we'll talk about it tomorrow. You know, that's too many. And some of the face masks are, we need to check, but normally that's a defensive guy playing high, tackling somebody that's shorter, and instead of bending his knees and dropping his pads and catching them, you know, underneath the chin, you know, they're just staying, they're keeping their knees straight, and it's a height thing. Now, the crazy, not crazy, one of those face masks was actually on Sean Tucker, where a guy came up and he stiff-armed him, but the guy moved his face. Oh, I'm sorry, Sean. I didn't even see you sitting there. Watch this. I seriously didn't see you sitting there. But normally I won't bring up a guy's name in this, but you got ex-running back. Let me share this with you. So normally he's going for the stiff arm, and the guy's coming up, and he's going for the crown of the helmet, and the guy moved his face, which is irregular, which caught him into the face mask. So then it was an offensive face mask penalty. That was correct, right? That was what happened with your left hand, right? Not that detail's important. And I would notice something like that. So, you know, that's kind of a happening. I don't think it was anybody trying to hurt anybody or anything like that. It's just kind of how those four things happen. But those other ones, we'll discuss that with the family.
Yeah, I was going to say, please explain the other 15 of them. That's just way too many. You don't want any. It's unavoidable. You're going to get a few here and there. But 16 cannot continue against Albany, cannot continue against Liberty, cannot continue the following week against Florida State, and on and on and on throughout the schedule, Spencer.
It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And it has to do with the fact it's just laziness. I mean, the Sean Tucker penalty, I'm in agreement with Dino.
Lack of focus.
Yeah. But the rest of them are just lack of focus. You just feel like you're not playing a particularly good team.
It's only Albany.
You don't have to like use the correct fundamentals. You'll be able to get away with some stuff. You got to be better than that.
You took shortcuts.
You got to be better than that.
Against a team that was playing as hard as possible, probably near the end of the game, they were a little demoralized. But for the most part, they were trying to bring it as best they could.
Well, yeah. And the problem is, too, is this is a game where this is how you lose the Albany game.
Yeah.
You don't lose it on the scoreboard. You lose it by creating bad habits that then stick with you for the rest of the season. You cannot let that happen. That is how you come out of the Albany game, and it should be considered a loss. So you got to clean those things up. You got a much better opponent coming into town this weekend, and you got to make sure that you're really on top of your game.
Yeah, you're not getting under Cuffler and Carino again. You're getting Malik Willis, a true, legitimate dual threat. Very good quarterback for Liberty. Liberty.
By the way, did you see that Carino was a commit for Syracuse lacrosse before he decided to play football in college and went to Albany?
Yeah.
Interesting.
You might want to rethink that. Well, no. Not every game is going to be a blowout 62-24.
But they are 0-3.
It's his life to live. That's also true. ESPN Radio, Exit 31, QSportsTalk.com. We take a quick break. We come back, and we'll get to the last thing that we'll say today.
This is Exit 31. Here is Rain Stradamus and Nostra Davidson on ESPN Radio and QSportsTalk.com. Here's the last thing we'll say today.
I'm looking directly at an update from our very own Stephen Bailey, who gave you the breakdown a little bit earlier. He of 24/7 Sports on ESPN Radio with us at Exit 31 and QSportsTalk.com. So week 4 depth chart is out. Tommy DeVito is still listed as QB1, although Dino said earlier the final decision has not been made. Until it comes out of Dino Baber's mouth and he says it, I'm not going with anything that's on that sheet of paper that I'm looking at. Abdul Adams, of course, one of three co-backups to Sean Tucker now. Aaron Service and Carlos Vettorello were swapped on the depth chart, and then that's about it. Other than that, it's pretty much status quo from what we saw heading into the Albany game. Just wanted to put that out there. What do you think, though, Spencer? This is the last thing that we'll say today, and we'll get you ready for Brent Axon on the block in just a couple minutes, but according to ESPN, I think it was MRI901 who brought this to my attention in the QSportsTalk.com chat, but the passing defense for Syracuse is top 15, rushing defense top 4, total defense number 4 and number 8. That's where they're ranked. So this breaks down with Syracuse, who, I mean, we've heard a number of people say this. We can see it with our own two eyes. It's a good defense. right? We've heard championship level defense, or maybe more realistically, it's a team that could win 7 or 8 games. And some very credible football reporters and journalists and experts have said this to us directly on the air. Mike McAllister, for one, he had mentioned that 8 win total. That doesn't mean you're going to win 8 games, but that's the type of defense you have if you get a little something out of the offense.
It 100% is. But that's, again, if everybody performs well. And I think what you've seen so far are flashes of the ability to be able to do that. But how realistic is it that you're going to see everybody perform that way? I still think that they're a 6-win team. I think they're just good enough. I don't necessarily think that they're going to shock people with, you know, an incredible type of season. We're not going to see a 10-win season like we did a few years ago. But I think they're very capable of staying in some of these games against, you know, more difficult opponents.
I think what they can do defensively against a quarterback as talented as Malik Willis with Liberty is going to tell us a lot. Because I'm looking at Florida State the week after. I hate to look ahead, but I'm going, they could win. Maybe both. We'll see. Brent's up next. You're on the block at the top of the hour. It's ESPN Radio. Exit 31 out. See you tomorrow at 2.